This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. They've been called the current kings of deadpan rock, and although the band Cake is best known for its well-written, ironic songs, they also do some terrific ballads and covers. My guest, John McCrae, is Cake's lead singer and songwriter and plays guitar, keyboards, and percussion. Cake has been recording since 1994. Their first album had a song called How Do You Afford Your Rock and Roll Lifestyle, which became a hit on college radio. Their second album, Fashion Nugget, went platinum. Yet they've preserved their idiosyncratic sound and continue to live in Sacramento, California. Cake's latest album, their fifth, is called Pressure Chief. Here's a song from it called Wheels, sung and co-written by my guest John McCrae. That there were times when you've been afraid that people will see your songs as a quick palate cleanser in between those real serious songs of yearning and white male anger. Can you describe what the potential problem is here?
Well, for a lot of years, and I think it's just about to become that way again, but for a lot of years, radio was certainly, you know, kind of like the oral equivalent of a really large SUV. In other words, it was sort of a power trip, and the music that they played was all really big and bold and kind of bulbous and fat sounding. And our music has always been more economical and low to the ground, intentionally, not because we were weak, but because we favor that aesthetic. We a lot of times felt like the court jester coming in to dance around before the king, you know, in the intermission.
One of the songs on your new CD, Pressure Chief, is called End of the Movie. Do you want to describe what the song is about?
Well, I think it's a song about accepting limitation and accepting imperfection. And, you know, there's a freedom that comes with accepting the triviality and uselessness that is life. You're sort of off the hook in a lot of ways. And I don't think it's necessarily depressing.
Why don't we hear it? This is End of the Movie, written and sung by my guest John McCrae of the band Cake.
People you love will turn their backs on you. You'll lose your hair, your teeth, your knife will fall out of its sheath, but you still don't like to leave before the end of the movie. People you hate will get their hooks into you. They'll pull you down, you'll frown, they'll tar you and drag you through town. But you still don't like to leave before the end of the movie. No, you still don't like to leave before the end of the show.
That's End of the Movie from Cake's new CD, Pressure Chief, and my guest, John McCrae, is co-founder of the band and its lead songwriter and singer. You know, I really do like your songwriting. I'm wondering if you've ever consciously sat down and studied other people's songs or studied, you know, the body of work of one songwriter to just see how does this work? How do their songs work? How are they put together?
Yeah. Early on, I was fascinated with Hank Williams Sr. songs. not to be confused with Junior. And I think the almost skeletal simplicity of his writing, I was just taken aback. I think this was when I was 18 or 19 years old. And I went ahead and learned a lot of his songs and sort of felt empowered by the simplicity of his songs. And I think discovered that it's easier to write a really complicated song than it is to write a very simple song.
So you sure you were studying songs like I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry?
Yeah, these songs are, you know, just incredibly archetypal, and yet, you know, not very many people can write them, you know, well.
Did you feel like you could sing that kind of material, that the song was suited for who you are as a person and for your voice?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think it influenced me in terms of, you know, the plaintive voice tradition of blues and country. You know, Hank Williams is always complaining about something in his songs. And, you know, there's a howling quality to it that I, you know, quite like. So, you know, and at the same time, I was also very fascinated by the arranging of big band music, especially Benny Goodman. And what I was mostly interested in that music was, and of course I couldn't play that on the acoustic guitar, was the interaction between contrapuntal parts, where one instrument would be chugging along in one direction and another instrument would seemingly just come out of nowhere and go in a different direction, and somehow it all worked together like a clock almost. You know, Benny Goodman did that especially well in the 1940s. So this was sort of a very formative time, this sort of going back and forth between Hank Williams Sr. and Benny Goodman. It was a great thing for me to do, to just get out of the rock of my teenage years.
Now, in addition to writing your own songs, you also occasionally do covers. You've covered the Willie Nelson song, Sad Songs and Waltzes. On the new CD, you do the Bread song, The Guitar Man. I want to play what is probably your most classic cover, which is I Will Survive, the Gloria Gaynor anthem. And, you know, when she sings it, it's like black woman's anthem of survival and self-empowerment. And when you sing it, you're singing it as, you know, it's like, you know, a white guy who's been hurt and he's taken it. I mean, he's coming, you know, he's getting through it.
Yeah.
it has a different sound. You sing it completely differently. It's arranged differently. Your phrasing is completely different than Gloria Gaynor's. I really love your recording of it. What did you decide to do it in the first place?
We did the song because you know, we thought it was a good song. You know, we don't really care much about genre. A lot of people took the song to be sort of a joke. Mm-hmm. Like we were saying, oh, isn't it funny that, you know, disco sucks, but we're doing a disco song, oh, ha ha. But that was completely wrong. We really liked the song. We liked the notes in the song. We liked the words in the song. You know, the line, you know, and so you're back from outer space, I just think is really, really great. You know, that's a funny line, but there are a lot of really, really poignant emotional lines in the song. And the song is such an anthemic kind of song. You know, it's been used for, you know, as a gay rights anthem. It's been used by jocks in Europe as like a soccer anthem. Obviously, black women and white women alike have taken a lot of power from that song. You know, and I sang the song from the point of view, obviously, of a white male, and thus it's a lot angrier and less, you know, perhaps emotionally vulnerable, but I think the emotional vulnerability is in there somewhere.
Well, time to hear it. So this is I Will Survive, as sung by John McCrae on the Cake album Fashion Nugget.
It took all the strength I had just not to fall apart. I'm trying hard to mend the pieces of my broken heart. And I've spent oh so many nights just feeling sorry for myself. I used to cry, but now I hold my head up high. stupid little person still in love with you. And so you thought you'd just drop by and you expect me to be free. But now I'm saving all my loving for someone who's loving me. Oh, now go walk out the door. Just turn around. Now you're not welcome anymore. Weren't you the one who tried to break me with desire? Did you think I'd crumble? Did you think I'd lay down and die? Oh, now I will survive. Yeah, as long as I know how to love, I know I'll be alive. I've got all my life to live. I've got all my love to give. I will survive. I will survive.
My guest John McRae singing on I Will Survive from the Cake CD, Fashion Nugget, and they have a new CD called Pressure Chief. When you started performing, how old were you?
Well, I'd been playing music in my room and writing songs for a long time, but I think the first time that I went out, I think it had to have been, I don't think it was until I was about 25. But
That's old.
Yeah, but I had been writing songs for, at that point, about 10 years or so. So I had
throughout those 10 years, you weren't in a high school band, you weren't in a garage band,
I was in garage bands, and then they would kick me out.
They'd kick you out? Why?
Because I didn't play butt rock very well. I mean, basically what was going on then was kind of like Camaro music or something, you know, like sort of what's coming back right now in a sort of self-conscious way, but, you know, sort of, guitar rock, sort of white male guitar rock stuff, and I didn't do it that well. You know, that was good in retrospect, because of what it made me do was, you know, go back to my room and write more songs. And during the period, I wrote tons of songs. I wrote probably, you know, 3 or 4 songs a week for years. So by the time I started playing out, I had hundreds and hundreds of songs to choose from. I still have hundreds of songs just in a backlog, which sometimes makes me lazy.
One of your first records to catch on was called Rock and Roll Lifestyle. And it's kind of about the poses that a lot of rock fans put on. And I think it's more about rock fans than it is about rock musicians.
Yeah.
How old were you when you wrote this, and what was on your mind when you were writing it?
I had to have been maybe 24 or 25 when I wrote that.
So shortly before you were performing.
Yeah, not too long before I started performing. And, you know, I was partially just marveling at the incredible prosperity that would allow the mercurially changing fashions of music, and how music just got discarded, every few months, consumed, discarded, and just thinking about all these leather jackets that were no longer in style, that were just rotting in the landfill, you know, and all the cows whose skin, you know, was being consumed so quickly, so desperately almost. There was something desperate about that I wanted to write about. I like the idea of things being out of style, believe it or not, especially from an environmental perspective. I love the idea of things being out of style.
Well, why don't we hear Rock and Roll Lifestyle? And this is from the first Cake CD. Let's hear it.
Well, your CD collection looks shiny and costly. How much did you pay for your bad Moto Guzzi? And how much did you spend on your black leather jacket? Is it you or your parents in this income tax bracket? Now tickets to concerts and drinking at clubs, sometimes for music that you haven't even heard of. And how much did you pay for your rock and roll t-shirt that proves you were there, that you heard of them first? Now, how do you afford your rock and roll lifestyle? How do you afford
afford your rock and roll lifestyle? How do you afford your rock and roll lifestyle? Oh, tell me.
That's Rock and Roll Lifestyle, written and sung by my guest, John McCrae. It's from the first Cake CD, and Cake has a new CD now, which is called Pressure Chief. Now, you know, you do a lot of concerts, and what are some of your impressions of the way fans react to you as a band? And what I'm thinking of specifically is I read in a concert review that at one concert somebody threw a bottle at the band, and you got the guy who did it on stage and started questioning him on stage and talking to him.
You know, sometimes people forget that you're humans up there, and they just want to connect with the center of the energy. And they, you know, if they throw something, maybe it touches it somehow. But I think sometimes I had a conversation with him on stage and asked him why he felt it was necessary to throw the thing. And actually, you know, when given the microphone, he became very sheepish and wasn't. I actually felt sorry for him and wasn't angry at him at all. So, I just think people get caught up in the moment. And, you know, if you're a good thrower, maybe that's the way you feel like you can participate in the cultural event or ritual.
This is a really interesting and, I must say, very generous way of looking at it.
Well, I honestly think that it's in some ways unfair to just put all of the focus on the performers, and sometimes people just want to be part of it somehow. And I think that's why, you know, sometimes people, in the 60s would lift up their tops and show their boobies and stuff. You know, I think that that's just like wanting to connect to the center of the fire. And it's not, although it seems sort of silly in a lot of ways, maybe it's not silly because it's ritual, and somehow people want to be part of that ritual and they want to be part of that event. In some ways, you know, it's actually really sick, but it's all we have, I think, as a culture.
The microphone, the stage, that's the power spot. And some people thrive being there and other people find it very hard to go from backstage to onstage without, yeah. You know, without nearly passing out. So,
yeah.
How do you like being in the power spot?
Well, I like it and I don't like it. I think it's really silly on one hand. And on the other hand, I think it's, fairly profound, place to be, but it, if you want to be in the middle of that fire, there's a price that you pay for that, and you it uses you up, so I think that I couldn't say that I love it, but I could say that I really am profoundly grateful for the opportunity to be there, and sometimes I love it for fleeting moments, but it's also I'm also juggling a lot of things, and I really have to pay attention and do my job well in order to deserve that job.
Can you talk a little bit more about the price you feel you pay for being on stage and being in the center of the fire, as you put it?
Well, I mean, you know, it goes from, you know, every day, you know, a lot of really nothing time, like a lot of waiting around for things to happen, and then suddenly you're dancing in the middle of the fire, and then afterward you go backstage and you listen to the sound of ice melting in the cooler, and it's a very, very stark contrast. It's like when you're trying to go to bed, somebody, your brother flicking the light switch on and off. It's kind of violating in a lot of ways. It's not that either state of being is wrong. It's just that when it goes back and forth so quickly, I think it has a certain sort of schizophrenic effects on the human psyche, you know, and playing different roles that are maybe sort of intense roles. And going back and forth between those roles, I think everyone can understand what that's like. I mean, everyone plays a lot of different roles in their lives, from mother to you know, worker to sister or brother, and you sort of hopefully seamlessly, you know, glide between all these different roles. And, you know, those roles are less sort of contrasted, I think, from each other than perhaps, you know, getting on a stage in front of 80,000 people and then going and sitting in your bunk alone with your book. It's a very, very, you know, very, very intense contrast.
After your first record that went platinum, you had like a nervous exhaustion collapse.
Yeah.
Or so I read. Mm-hmm. What was that moment like for you? Like what are some of the things that reached the state where you just had to stop?
Mm. Yeah, well, it was mostly physical. I had been through, I think, a lot of time zones in a very, mm-hmm. very small amount of time. And apparently you can have exhaustion just from flying from, you know, New York to Los Angeles. But I had been from New York to Los Angeles and back, you know, a whole bunch of times. I'd been to Japan, Australia, Europe, and back to the East Coast and West Coast, all within a very small amount of time. Plus, the band was arguing about things, and there was a lot of seething sort of emotions. And I think I'd just been through a breakup, and it was just a big mess. And I didn't have time to do anything or to clean up anything. And so I just kind of, I got into this state where I couldn't sleep, and there was no dramatic point where I fell over on stage, but I was at a point where I couldn't fall asleep, and I couldn't eat, and you know, I just felt really messed up. And a lot of people said it was because I was using heroin. Which I find sort of funny because I'm very anti-heroin. But at any rate, it, you know, it was something that I just needed a couple of weeks off, and I was better. Yeah, but that's what happens, I think, with music, because you know it's so rare that there is any, you know, success in music. And I think the imperative of the music business is just put the pedal to the metal and make you know. Fully capitalize on this fleeting opportunity. And you know, I didn't really know much about the music industry at that point. I know a lot more now, and I, as much as I understand the imperatives of this business, I think you know, there needs to be balance.
Well, I've been the one choosing all of the records so far, so I'd like to end by asking you to choose one of your favorite tracks from the new CD, Pressure Chief.
Well, I like the song "Take It All Away."
Me too. Okay.
Because
good.
it's sort of sad and also funny at the same time. And I think what's important is that the fact that there's sadness and humor in the same room. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's ironic. It's they're just sort of coexisting and getting along and, you know, drinking a beer together.
Well, John McCrae, a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
John McCrae is the lead singer and songwriter of the band Cake. Their latest CD is called Pressure Chief.